Welcome to At the Table. I'm Clark Wolf, and this is the weekly radio show about all things food, brought to you from Sonoma County, not just wine country, but farm country. And as anybody who listens from time to time knows, it's also, for me, very much food country. And today we're going to be talking about one of my favorite topics of all the world, the legendary and wonderful late James Beard. He was the Dean of American Cookery, and I have to admit, and you've probably heard me say this before, I had the great fortune of meeting James when I was, let's just say in my 20s, running a little cheese and wine shop at the base of Nob Hill in San Francisco, and the door actually darkened. And there in the doorway stood this gigantic figure. It was James Beard in a black leather trench coat, jeans and a striped t-shirt, walking in the door saying, "My doctor says I shouldn't even be allowed in a store like this. Do you have any Appenzeller?" It was one of those things. And about a year later, I was getting to know one of his assistants. He had a lot of assistants everywhere. He just had all kinds of assistants. But a young man named John Carroll said, "Mr. Beard remembers you and would love you to come to dinner at the Stanford Court," where James Beard lived about half of the year between New York and San Francisco. "And don't be insulted if at about 9:15, 10 o'clock, he says, 'I'm tired, go home.'" Well, at 1:45 a.m., as James Beard, John Carroll, and I were sitting in the Stanford Court kind of lobby bar drinking what was my second ever Glenlivet single malt scotch neat. That means just by itself. John got up to go to the restroom, and James leaned over and said, "Come over tomorrow for breakfast and we'll have a good gossip." And so began a very fine friendship. I have to say, I will never forget the friendship that James expressed and shared with me and so many others. This man who introduced Julia Child to New York City, who identified so many talented people and shared them with the world, and who was just a wonderful, regular, very smart fellow. My two guests today on At the Table are two of my favorite people now, because they have been working on something that I hold dear. They have done a documentary they call James Beard, America's First Foodie. Please welcome to At the Table Kathleen Squires and Elizabeth Frederici. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you, Clark. Thanks, Clark.
Well, all right. So, Elizabeth, you see how excited I am. Tell us a little bit about how this film, and Kathleen, you jump in too, how this film came into your minds and how it came to be able to be done.
Well, Kathleen and I go way back. We are old college friends. And we connected in 2009 when I had moved back to Hoboken. And in 2012, I moved back to Portland, Oregon. And Kathy and I were talking on the phone, actually Skyping, and she had just come back from the James Beard Foundation. And she'd been a long member of the James Beard Foundation, and she'd come back from a lunch where a friend of ours had been cooking. And she started just kind of telling me, you know, all kinds of facts about him, because like so many people, I knew his name, but I didn't really know anything about him.
Right.
And I didn't know that he grew up in Portland, and I didn't know that he had been kicked out of Reed for being gay, and all kinds of interesting facts that I didn't know. And I said to her, as all good documentary filmmakers would say, like, how come no one's made a film about him?
Yeah.
And we quickly Googled it, and, you know, Oregon Public Broadcasting had made a short, but there really had not been a feature-length documentary. And so we thought, well, what a better partnership. As I was, you know, in Portland, his childhood home, and Kathy was in New York, his long-term home, and Kathy being a well-renowned and respected food writer, was able to get us the access to the people in the film, which I would have never been able to get on my own. So it just seemed like a perfect marriage for this project. So that's really how it began, innocently enough, and I think you were one of our very first interviews, and have been so generous with your time over all these years and provided me with so much important information.
Well, it was an exciting thing when you came and talked about it, because Kathleen, you know, you've been working and writing about food for a long time. So the credibility for the understanding of it was there. How did you get involved in food writing?
I actually kind of fell into it, Clark. I worked in book publishing for many years and realized that instead of editing other people's work, I wanted to be the writer. So I left book publishing and first to write a novel that really didn't go anywhere.
That happens.
As you know, when you commit yourself to a project like that, you need to make a living. So I thought, well, how can I make a living? And I started doing magazine pieces. And at that time, my focus was on food and travel in a time when not everybody in the world was doing it. There was no such thing as Yelp, for example. And I found that I enjoyed that so much more than writing the novel, so I decided to instead of becoming a novelist, to stay with the food thing.
I am talking, by the way, with Kathleen Squires and Elizabeth Federici. They are the co-producers. Is that the right way of saying something about a documentary? Is that right?
Yep. Yep.
The co-producers of James Beard, America's First Foodie, documentary film that is about to be launched all over the country. I hope to see it on my phone sometime soon. Kathleen, so getting to this particular documentary, obviously, if you write about food, the name James Beard kind of comes up.
Absolutely, constantly. And that's really what drove me to partner with Elizabeth on this project, is that as a food writer and a member of the James Beard Foundation, I knew very well who he was. But I found that, you know, most people knew about the awards. They knew his name, but they had no idea who James Beard was. So I like to say that I wanted to make this documentary because I got tired of people, even those in the culinary world, asking me, well, who was James Beard?
You know, I have to tell you, not throwing shade, as we say in New York, on anyone, but I've been a longtime advocate of the Beard Foundation focusing on James Beard. What a concept. And they didn't really do it initially. And I understand that because the people involved wanted to name it for him as an inspiration and as an image, but not have it be about him. And I understand that. By the same token, many of us, yourself obviously included, felt that, you know, if you're going to have the name of a great legendary food figure on an organization, everybody in that organization should at least be conversant on his contributions. And I am proud to say that they have done a lot more. They make sure that every year at the awards, there's something about James Beard. But you're right. Having seen some books written and published that I thought were, how can I put this politely, lousy. Was that out loud? Yes. And I happen to know that there's a new book that's just been approved by John Bernthal, who's going to write a new updated biography. And I have a feeling he'll be watching your documentary from cover to cover, as they say. And that's a good thing. Elizabeth, we're going to talk more about the whole process of filmmaking, but had you ever thought of doing a food-related documentary before?
Not really. And documentaries tend to come to me. That's just the way I've ended up working all these years, is that projects present themselves and opportunities present themselves. But that being said, you know, I grew up in a restaurant family in New Jersey, so food has always been a huge part of my life.
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised that it happened at all. And I think that one of the main reasons, as you already stated, that once I started reading, well, certainly Jim's own autobiography, Delights and Prejudices, which unfortunately ends in 1964, so he still lived another 20 years after that, but you know, I just fell in love with him. I mean, I fell in love with him, and I think one of the reasons Kathleen and I felt so strongly is that most of the information you find about Jim is in printed text. It's books, autobiographies, biographies, and we live in a media-rich world now. Most younger people are getting their information from video.
Right.
And so the fact that, you know, there was not a film about him meant that it wasn't going to be as accessible to a whole new generation of people who should understand the lineage of, you know, farm to table, which everyone takes for granted and thinks that, you know, the newest person invented it. It's like,
but he did.
He
championed it. In the Heritage Cookbook, there is a section, an introduction, an aside to the home cook, where he talks about getting the best possible ingredients from the local resources and using them fresh and in simple ways. It could have been written last week, couldn't it?
Exactly. Exactly. And, one of our characters in the film, Greg Higgins, who's a Beard Award winner from Portland, said, you know, you read Delights and Prejudices, and you read the stories, and you read the recipes, and it reads like a menu of today. Everything that he talked about is become, you know,
the centerpiece of the food movement now. Well,
sustainable, and local, environmentally friendly,
fresh, simply done, not too many ingredients, respect for the food traditions that it comes from. So we just have a minute left in this segment. We're going to be talking more about the film itself in just a few minutes. But was there anything that at the start of this project made you pause and think, wow, this is going to be a big deal, or this is not going to be so easy?
Well, that's a two-parted question. I think the fact that the not easy part is that, you know, you're trying to bring someone to life who's been gone from us for a long time, and there was, even though he was the first television chef, there's not actually a lot of video of him that's candid and not kind of commercial.
And they're so terrible. He was terrible on camera.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
You know, wait a second. I want to stop you here. You're going to give us the second part of that answer to the complex question that came out of my head somehow. When we come back, when we're going to be talking much more with these two very talented documentary, as my friend says, filmmakers about James Beard, right back here at the table. Welcome back to At the Table. I am talking to two very talented people, Kathleen Squires and Elizabeth Federici. They have just completed and are about to promote, airing all over the country, showing all over the country. We don't even know what to call a film being shown anymore. Is it downloaded onto our phone? It's called James Beard, America's First Foodie. Of course, I have a very strong affinity to this project. I was delighted to talk to them early in the process. We were talking in the last segment about how there were some things that were tough because Jim felt very uncomfortable on camera. He felt, he started out as we wanted to be an opera singer, and then he did light opera and he was on the stage, but he was huge, physically large, and he was not entirely comfortable in front of a camera. Frankly, I think if we had some time for some selfies these days and some little video chats, he'd be fine in about 20 minutes. But in those days, it was tough because it was very kind of formal. The other part of the question I asked, and Kathleen was going to answer it for us, is what was surprising about this project that made you say, wow, this is going to be really something?
Well, Clark, I would say that the minute that I thought this could be huge and it also showed me why it was so necessary is how readily so many people stepped up to participate. People like you, Clark, people like Wolfgang Puck, Jacques Pepin, Martha Stewart, Ruth Reichel, Ted Allen, Alice Waters, the list goes on of people who said, I want to be a part of this.
Yeah.
I want to help tell Jim's story.
And, you know, all of those people that you mentioned really were part of his story. Jim was on the phone every single morning for an hour or more talking to people. I had the most serious withdrawal I've ever had in my life was after he passed away, not having that conversation every single morning. It took me a year or two to kind of get over it because he would check in with a lot of people. I mean, again, he made me feel very special, but he talked to a lot of wonderful people every single day. Some of them very, very famous and some of them very, very modest and down-to-earth folks.
Absolutely.
So tell us about the process. Tell us about the travel. You talked to me, you talked to a few other people. What was the journey to make this film?
Well, you know, documentary is a messy process. You don't always want to see how the sausage is made. because we were still figuring out how we were going to tell Jim's story. This is a man that lived, you know, 9 decades of the 20th century. He saw the first car. He saw the first television. They probably didn't have a phone in the house that he grew up in Portland until later in his life. And so he really saw how refrigerated trucks. I mean, he saw how technology changed food.
Right.
And we really wanted, I mean, one of our taglines is a century of food through the lens of one of its pioneers. I mean, because really he watched the evolution of this billion-dollar industry that so many people are making a living in. He was one of those first people that said, this could be an industry because everybody loves food and we need to talk about it and people love to tell stories about it. And so we were, you know, figuring out exactly how we were going to do that and whose voices were going to be in it. You know, it took a while for us to kind of glean through all of that. And then, you know, fabulous folks like you would then turn me on to somebody else. And before you know it, you know, we had, you know, I would say we have over 100 hours of interviews, you know, for a film that is less than 60 minutes. That's a big shooting ratio.
Well, so, I think that there's a PBS series, you know, coming to a theater near you. I mean, you know, we've got to get the rest of the 100 hours. He was somebody who obviously, if you knew him or knew his reputation during his lifetime, got some grief about being commercial because he would often act as a spokesperson for a company, a food product, a category. And, you know, the more we look at this and the more we look at the industry that is the largest industry in the world, the only thing we can't live without, food, and has been for millennia. I mean, this is how the world has worked, folks. It was a way out of curiosity that he could find out how the hot pepper sauce industry worked, how the fresh beef industry worked. You know, he was often asked his opinion about major matters, but he was basically a home cook. He'd done some catering, but it was based on home cookery and a style of cookery that can only be called home kitchen cookery. For him to learn about this industrial behemoth that was being built, as you say, lumbering to its feet, he really needed to get inside it, didn't he?
Yes, absolutely.
What were some of those?
He had to make a living.
Yes. Oh, talk about that a little bit, would you please?
Well, Clark, one of the things that you point out in the film, actually, just to give you a little snippet, is how Jim did get a little bit of grief for taking endorsement deals back in the day. But today, if you don't have an endorsement deal, you're not a person.
Right. I mean, it's absolutely true. By the way, we're talking about a documentary film that's just out called James Beard, America's First Foodie. We are talking to Kathleen Squires and Elizabeth Federici. They are the co-producers and writers and authors and directors and magicians behind this film. We're talking about James Beard. And you're right. If you don't have your name on a Lexus or a new kind of high-fat butter, I mean, you're just not cool.
Exactly.
Did you get some comment from, let's just call them the younger generation, who might have been surprised at some of the trouble that Jim Beard had?
Well, you know, the film is not out yet, so it hasn't really screened yet for a general audience, so I guess that is yet to be determined. But I think people would be very surprised. They would not, the folks we've talked to, I don't think people would understand why anybody would give him grief. And, of course, you know, Jim didn't take endorsements for things that he didn't really believe in.
Right.
And often what he was asked to do, for example, like with Planters Peanuts, is to come up with recipes that would incorporate the product. So it wasn't just his face. It was, hey, you're a fabulous cook. How would you use Planters Peanuts? What kind of recipes? And, you know, he would be somebody who would come up with, like, an early Asian chicken salad that would use chopped peanuts or, you know, so he, you know, I don't think he wasn't just out there slapping his name on anything.
Absolutely. And this is the person who suggested that a hamburger might be nice with lettuce, tomato, and mayonnaise.
Yeah.
And a butter toasted bun. I mean, seriously, folks, this is fundamental eating at its finest. And how did the two of you work together? I mean, obviously you get these things, and I remember the experience of being with you, but how did you work together collaboratively as a filmmaker, as a writer, as a food person, as a documentary professional? How did you meld those?
Well, first, Clark, as a writer, I would start to formulate the questions, and Beth and I would collaborate on those and storytelling. And I think what a documentarian and a writer have in common is storytelling. So our efforts to collaborate were a lot easier than I thought they would be, because the worlds aren't very different when you're trying to tell a story.
You know, yeah. I love that you were able to respect each other because you had a common language, which is storytelling.
Right.
And then I'm sorry. Go ahead, please.
And I was going to say, and then I picked up the ball because, you know, I've been making films for 20 years. So I knew how to actually take those interviews and weave them into something that's not just words, but words and pictures and sound.
Well, Elizabeth, tell us some of the other kinds of documentaries that you've done real quickly.
Well, and you probably know of this group. My last film was a film called Space, Land, and Time, Underground Adventures with Ant Farm. And
yes.
I co-directed that with another filmmaker, Laura Harrison, a good friend of mine. And, of course, the Ant Farm had worked out of San Francisco all through the 70s. They were an incredible, interesting group that worked in architecture and video and art and performance piece. I tend to be attracted to archival films. I kind of have this soft spot for really important cultural figures that were so prescient that they are on the verge of being forgotten.
You know, I have to jump in here.
After them, I've just, a little more credit.
I have just been going through some things in my New York apartment and came across a big box of videotapes. What am I supposed to play those on? Some of them are kind of amazing that I'd like to keep. And you're absolutely right. If we don't figure out how to preserve the last two iterations of, I don't know, documentation, we're going to be in trouble. All right, when we come back, I want to hear about the people you met along the way to doing this wonderful film about James Beard right back here at the table. And we're back at the table. I am talking with Kathleen Squires and Elizabeth Federici about their new documentary film, James Beard. James Beard, America's First Foodie. I'd like to say the name again, James Beard. I'll say it two more times. I want to know, Kathy and Liz, or Beth, you know, you're Elizabeth and Kathleen, but when you talk to each other, you're Liz and Kathy, right?
Beth and Kathy, yes.
Beth and Kathy, okay. Tell us about Martha and Alice and Ruth. Oh, my.
Well, Martha had met Jim back in her days of catering and cited him as a huge influence on her career, starting with his cookbooks. And it was really incredible when we went to speak with her because she had those original books right there at the ready, pointing out which specific recipes she has carried with her whole life. So that was pretty amazing, I thought.
I have to tell you, the first time I met Martha was with Jim, and it was a dinner at an Upper East Side Chinese restaurant. We were in the basement. They were doing a banquet for us. And I was Martha's dinner partner. I mean, I sat next to her, and she was across the table from her then husband, Andy, and Andy Stewart from Stewart, Taborian and Chang, who was the publisher of her first very, very glamorous and beautiful books. And after a couple of martinis, they went at it. I have very vivid memories of them saying horrible things to each other. I kept looking at Jim, and he kept just kind of smiling and cocking his head, like, welcome to the world. So who else did you meet that was memorable? Not that every one of those people isn't.
Right, exactly. I mean, the cavalcade of stars that we were able to talk to is amazing. You know, Ruth Reichel was really sweet and fun, and she was introduced to Jim from Marion Cunningham, who she actually met for the first time at this party that she was invited to and that Mr. Beard was at. And she just tells a really funny story about how she kind of went up and said something kind of, you know, silly.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I make it.
Yeah.
And he kind of said, really? And she says she was done. And then she found Marion later, and Marion said, well, he's much nicer to boys.
You know, I've never heard that story, but I completely believe it. I remember sitting with him at the Stanford Court. They had a little cafe in the hotel. And very cafe, very tea room kind of place. And three little old ladies came up to him and started talking to him. Blah, 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 blah. And he, you know, listening and turning and blinking his eyes and all this stuff. And they finished. They said goodbye. They walked away. And he turned to me and he said, who they? I mean, he would talk to, he was charming. One day, I mean, he was a friend of Gypsy Rose Lee's. I mean, right? I mean, he had some interesting characters. Who else did you love talking to?
Jonathan Waxman.
Yes.
Who had, you know, looks at Jim as a mentor, a personal mentor. One of the stories that I love that he shares is how when Jim was in the hospital, that his hospital room became quite a party because of
yep.
all of the people that would come and the food that would be sent. And he himself, John, would send a bottle of Glenlivet in every care package
yeah.
that he brought over.
And yeah. somehow, no matter what the hospital treatment was, that Glenlivet bottle emptied. Didn't it? I mean, I don't know that it was IV, but it emptied nicely. What was it like talking to Alice Waters? I love Alice, and I've known her for many, many years, but, you know, sometimes she can be very careful with the way she speaks. She expresses herself in so many different ways, but Alice has never been a kind of natural on air. I mean, she's very powerful, and I respect her enormously. But a lot of times her most effective communication is in gentle writing and in creating an entire environment. So where did you interview Alice and what was it like?
I interviewed her at Chez Panisse, in the dining room at Chez Panisse, which was great because
yes.
she told the story of the first time that she met him. Again, Marion Cunningham brought him to Chez Panisse, and she pointed right behind her where he was sitting. So we were right in the room where he had had dinner, and she remembered what she made for him.
Yeah.
And that it was a lovely evening, and she just spoke very nostalgically.
Well, and very personally. I think that, yes. that one of the things that was wonderful about James, and by the way, you're making me remember my last meal with him at Chez Panisse, which was on that little tiny terrace at the front of the dining room in the cafe upstairs. The thing about Jim Beard was that he knew heads of state, right? Kings and queens and ambassadors and strippers and actors and all kinds. But he treated anyone he spoke with as if they were truly important and interesting in ways that not many people of that stature and that experience understand even is possible. I remember I brought a young client of mine early on in my career when I was there in New York, and he was a Persian, we like to say. He was Iranian, and he was a caviar guy. And we brought all these caviars to Jim, and we tasted all of them. And the next day, James Beard called me up and said, could you ask your young friend a couple of questions for me? Here is this man who knows everything about food asking questions about these caviars. Mind you, he had been able to describe the paintings on the tiles in the hotel lobby in Tehran that he visited in the 1960s, to the point where we had my young friend in tears. You know, he was so vivid in his descriptors and in his memory. Were memories of James Beard from other people as vivid as his were of almost everything he ever ate?
No. And as a matter of fact, you're not the first person to comment on that. Mark Forgione, Iron Chef Mark Forgione.
Yeah.
Asked his dad, Larry Forgione, who was very close to Jim, what was it that you loved so much about him? And he told the greatest story about, you know, he could tell you a story about this goat cheese that he had in Greece, and he could tell you the color of the dress that the lady was wearing.
Yeah.
And he could just paint this incredible picture for you till you felt like you were actually had that goat cheese in your mouth. And I do think that that was his gift. And then in his writing, I mean, when you read Delights and Prejudice, you feel like you're in the, you know, on the left bank in Paris, and you feel like you're at the Ritz in London, and, you know, it just takes you on this fabulous food journey that I think we're another tie to what we're seeing, a direct line from Jim is, you know, when you read cookbooks today, everybody's writing the personal story cookbook. Everybody's telling you their backstory, and they were a house painter, and, you know, they used to be in a band. Well, Jim and MFK Fisher, and there were only a handful of them that wrote in that storytelling way. Most cookbooks were just recipes. Jim really wove a tale, and now we see that, you know, if you don't do that in a cookbook, I don't think you get the deal today.
You know, what's interesting is that what people don't always understand is that not everyone's life is as interesting as the life of James Beard, let's be honest. And I want to tell you a little bit about his kind of wonderfully supportive instruction to anyone, for example, going to Paris. You arrive in the morning because you fly overnight. You go to Fouquet across from the Arc de Triomphe on the Champs-Élysées, and you order a coffee. And, you know, he really did lay things out for people so that they could have the kind of experience that he craved. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about what Jim Beard might feel like if he were online or Yelping today at the table. We are back at the table. I'm talking to Elizabeth Federici and Kathleen Squires. They are the king and queen, empress of a wonderful new documentary film, James Beard, America's First Foodie. The reason I'm having trouble this is such a labor of love, and I feel so passionate about what you've done. You're going to be showing this at film festivals all over the country. You're going to be, I'm assuming, a documentary becomes available later on somebody's app. How does that work?
Well, right from day one, I have to tell you, literally from day one, Kathleen and I said, this should be an American Masters. How is this not an American Masters already? There's one about Julia. There's one about Alice. Like, how is there not one about Jim?
Right.
And so after we started, I had reached out to a local Portland PBS station, and Dave Davis put me in touch with Michael Cantor, who had just become the executive, producer of American Masters. It was done and done. All he saw was a 4-minute trailer, and he was like, this is a no-brainer. And they came on as a co-producer. So
that's wonderful.
You will be able to
see
it on your little screen in your living room May 19th at 9 p.m., on PBS.
Nationwide.
And
so
there will also be DVDs.
All right, hold on. Let's make sure everybody knows that May 19th is just a little bit after Jim Beard's birthday, which was Cinco de Mayo. Yeah.
Correct. And our Portland premiere, which we feel very, very happy about, which is going to be at the Witzel Auditorium at the Portland Art Museum, is going to be on Jim's birthday. So we're really excited that the Portland premiere is going to be on his birthday.
Well, and I also happen to think that it's a great idea that every year on his birthday we can reissue this documentary and we can watch it again.
Exactly.
I like that idea. I think it's a good way. It's like Super Bowl is every year. Why can't we have a story about James Beard? So understanding that and the fact that you're going to be sharing this with communities all over the country and possibly other countries around the world, because I would imagine that people might find this fascinating. How do you think he would fit in? We've talked about this a little bit, but let's get into more detail. Now that you've done the story and now that you are about to share this all over the country, how do you think Jim Beard would fit in today?
I think, Clark, that he would fit in quite well, and not in the way that he would have originally thought. As you'll see in the film, he wasn't super comfortable in front of the camera.
Right.
So I don't know if he would be carrying his own show today, or somebody like a Bobby Flay, who has like 5 different television shows related to food. But I could see Jim being kind of a grand dame, if you will, or a judge on one of these cooking competitions.
Now, wait a second. I have to jump in here. Grand dame, indeed. I used to joke that the voice of American cookery was an aged English woman, including James Beard. let's be honest, Elizabeth, Dave, all these people. But also, I have in the pages, in the papers that I ended up getting from Emily Gilder, his assistant, that ended up at NYU. There was a handwriting analysis from the New Jersey Star Ledger, and it something like, this lady is a fabulous entertainer and loves to be hospitable to new guests and likes. It was really wonderful because a lot of the attributes that James Beard expressed strongly were generally reserved for women in this country. Let's be honest with that.
Yep.
He learned a lot of them from his mother. In point of fact, that's not really the case. And we realize that these things exist as a normal part of everyone's life. But there was an identity thing there.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I also think that he would have a fabulous blog. I mean, I think, let's face it, he had a syndicated column. And the syndicated column was the predecessor to the blog.
Absolutely, without question.
And he could... Can you imagine him up in that bed, up in the dining room of the Beard Foundation with his computer, never getting out of his bathrobe and blogging all day and putting pictures on Instagram?
Actually, I'll tell you something. No. He wouldn't do that. He would be downstairs at his desk because he really did like the physicalization of his telephone. Plus, he wrote notes on his daily, weekly calendar. And the NYU library has all of them. I mean, it went to that. It's amazing talking to Jeremiah, mad, whatever it was. And the other thing is, I think my personal thought is that he really did perform when he was in a small class. He would have 6 or 8 or 12, usually wealthy ladies from Texas, but a lot of other places and sometimes men. And he would do these cooking classes in his kitchen And it was surround sound. I mean, he would pay attention to everything that was going on and give directions here and there. And probably early television didn't work. Bobby Flay's kind of stuff doesn't work, where you kind of talk to the audience in that particular way. But boy, oh boy, reality television would totally fit James Beard. I mean, we would hope that it would not follow him out onto the shower. You know, you may know the story about how James Beard.
Yeah,
he had a shower out on the back deck on his upper level, and the backyard was in a greenhouse, but it was all glass, and the shower was not, shall we say, encumbered. You know, basically, sometimes his neighbors across the way in New York City would look across, and there would be this big, very large, larger than life, completely wet and naked James Beard taking a shower. I mean, I'm not sure that's in the documentary. When we come back, I want you to tell us, what did you find out that Jim Beard really loved? What did he really, really hate? And did any of that make it into this wonderful film, James Beard, America's First Foodie, when we come back right here at the table? We are back at the table with my two new best friends, Elizabeth Federici and Kathleen Squires. They have created a documentary called James Beard, America's First Foodie. Before we go any further, is there a website? Can people go and get online and find out when this is going to be aired or more information about it?
Yes, it's www.americasfirstfoodie.com. And then we also have a Facebook page that's America's First Foodie as well. And you can see the trailer there and see the list of participants and the synopsis and the air date.
I'll try not to do that.
Updating it with festivals. We're very excited that we're going to be having a premiere at the Sonoma Film Festival at the end of March. We're very excited about that.
Well, you know, people want to follow where this kind of wonderful experience takes them. Did you find things that Jim really loved or things that he really hated that you had to really think about whether or not they should go in the film?
Well, the love part, I don't think we had to think about because, again, I think what's going to be really, if you will, surprising to a younger generation is that he always championed American products.
Yes.
You know, he was really the person that said, why are we getting our morels from France when Oregon has some of the best mushrooms in the world? And, you know, he was really the first person that was championing American wine. I mean, the Four Seasons was the first restaurant,
yes,
you know, highbrow restaurant in New York City that had American wine on the wine list. Nobody else did. And that was because of James Beard. And so I think he loved America, and he loved our diversity, the diversity of our products, and was just really a champion of that.
Yeah, I used to think that we had to get rid of the word domestic, because it sounded like something had been neutered. You know what I mean? and say American. And he really very much promoted that. When we met, I was brought to New York by Barbara Kafka, who was then the food editor of Vogue. And we did a shop that she wanted to do called Star Spangled Foods, which really sounds terrible. But anyway, and I think she wanted me there. I know she wanted me there because I had worked with all these small producers and farmers and growers and cheesemakers. And, you know, when James Beard says, this is good goat cheese, it's good goat cheese. Was there anything he really hated? I mean, I once asked him, there was a very, I'm going to just say this out loud. Giuliano Bugiali is a wonderful man who lives in New York and in Florence. And James never liked him. And I asked him, why don't you like Giuliano? He's so nice. He's so talented. And Jim said, I don't like the way he smells. He was a very visceral person. Anything else he hated? And then we're going to be sure we finish this conversation with one more visit to your website.
Sure. I would say that Jim, and this is tied into something that he loved, I think, beyond anything, he loved being around, sitting at a table amongst friends,
right,
whether it be, or interaction.
But what did he hate? Last 30 seconds.
But, yeah, so I would say that with that, he hated to be alone.
All right. Well, you're never alone when you're James Beard. And I think going forward, when you go to Kathleen Squires and Elizabeth Federici's www.jamesbeardamericasfirstfoodie.com or .org?
It's just americasfirstfoodie.com.
.com. We love that. Thank you so much, both of you, for being on At the Table and also for making this wonderful film.
Thank you so much, Clark.
See you in Sonoma.
Okay.